now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Okay, good evening, everybody, or good late afternoon for those of you who are joining me on the west coast of the nation, or wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you, and that which you always have been, and who you currently are. Very delighted to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And just a quick reminder that these broadcasts have always been dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit that website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Or if you want the personal website, it's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And if you would like to call in tonight, I always appreciate callers. That number is toll-free. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break. And just want to say that these broadcasts are in podcast form. So you, in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, and just go on the website and just look into the archive section. You can pull up any episode that you would like to listen to. And these broadcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, Amazon Music, Spotify, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM HD3 in New York on the weekends. So, as I said before, these broadcasts have always focused on the continued integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all placed within the context of our relationships that we have with ourselves, others, and God, or the divine. And this integration of our spirituality and our mental health is very essential, because at any given moment, our minds interpret what we take in through our senses, and based on our previous experiences or our education levels, our upbringing, and so forth, our minds' interpretation, let's just say, often fail to capture a more accurate understanding of deeper lessons, perceived realities, and greater truths. And the reason for this is because our egos, you know what the ego is. Come on, we all have one. It all gets in the way. The reason for this is because our egos, which are very self-centered and limited, the ego wants to come in and take over and keep us from knowing ourselves as vast and eternal souls, as well as what needs to heal so that we can live in forgiveness, gratitude, bliss, and love. So admittedly, it is our egos that often lead us astray with all kinds of thoughts and selfish pursuits, a lower level consciousness, if you will, which is bound by time and space and causation. And yet, we also need to pay attention to our egos by asking ourselves in any given situation, is there something in me that's created this perception or reaction or distortion, so that we can better understand where our healing and transformation is still needed? And this is the reason why the integration of our spirituality and our mental health is vital for our awareness of who we are as souls. Now, here's a quick example. There is a huge difference between worldly love, which is more familiar to us, let's just say, and godly or divine love. Now, according to my teacher and dear friend, he says that humanity often uses the term, I love you. But such love is conditional because it's temporary and it changes as it goes back and forth with conflicting emotions of the mind, such as jealousy or envy or even hatred. And yet, godly or divine love is love that is not entangled in the human emotions of the mind. You know, divine love is eternal. It's not conditional. And it helps us to purify our minds by recognizing only that which is divine in all. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is really all about. You know, it can be summed up in one word. Everybody out there say it with me. Namaste. Which, my rough translation is, because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you have yet to see it in yourself. Because you see, it really doesn't matter who we are, or where we were born, or into what family we were placed. Ours is a world that's just filled with relationships. And the reason for this is because we're social beings. Social beings who often spend the majority of our lives, if not all of our lives, trying to make sense out of our world by trying to find our place in the world. And as social beings, it's often within the context of relationships that we experience tremendous mental, emotional, physical, spiritual pain and suffering. And maybe from overt acts of, you know, when we were betrayed and, you know, the cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us or vice versa, to simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Many people still bear the scars of the physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual woundedness. So, in this particular show, I'm going to be talking basically about how we integrate and transform our life stories, that is, from a place of woundedness or from a place of disappointment, and depending on how long we've been carrying around brokenness, also from a deeper place of bitterness to a place of healing, authenticity, and healthier relationships. The difficulty then is often finding that courage to discover that which has always been in you. But it's there. You come into the world with tremendous, tremendous things. You know, those gifts, those graces, those skills, your uniqueness. You know, that hachetas, that thisness, which John Duns Scotus, a Scottish Franciscan back in the 1300s, coined that word. Hachetas. It's a thisness. Because I'm a firm believer that we come into this world with everything that we already need for and ourselves and others. But maybe through some various experiences, we have given away parts, if not the whole, of our uniqueness or thisness. And maybe we've did this because we didn't feel as though we just simply couldn't live up to another person's expectation of us. Or maybe we hid our uniqueness from others in order to survive abuse. Or perhaps those aspects of ourselves have been taken away from us at the time when we were younger, and we didn't have enough strength to fight for that, to protect those things. Well, either way, whenever we become aware that we have done these things, let's not beat ourselves up. There is no shame and guilt in it, but what is truly needed is courage. Courage to reclaim those things, reclaim who we are. And we can reclaim our voice. We can reclaim our uniqueness. We can reclaim our thisness. And you know, when this occurs, we soon discover that we are going to begin to tell our stories of transformation from a different place in us. A place of healing, wholeness, and gratitude. And those are the stories people need to hear, especially the up-and-coming generations, especially generations who have yet to be born. Well, on that note, welcome to tonight's broadcast, and welcome to Autumn. The show is entitled Freddy's Autumn, Falling with Grace. Well, if you're looking on the calendar like I did today, September has been a very fast, And also a very interesting month so far. I mean, it's just filled with emotional conflicts and hostilities and stories told of people who, even in spite of the circumstances, seem to have the very best of who they are brought out to benefit all humanity. And I don't think that's by accident, because whenever there's times of local or state or national, even world tragedies and trauma, it does have a tendency to bring out the worst in people, but yet it also has a wonderful way of bringing out the best in people. And so, with every loss that we experience in our lives, and maybe some of you are going through tremendous loss right now, and September hasn't been a kind month to you. Every loss we've experienced, every disappointment, every tragedy that we're faced with, sooner or later, these things all present us with this challenge. Will these experience us make us bitter, or will these experiences make us better? And this is where I find most people struggling between the two. Many people ask me, well, how does an experience have the potential to make me bitter or better? Well, let's see if we can answer that question by flipping it around a little bit, okay? Instead of a this or that kind of question, instead, how about we realize that there is so much more to us than what we have become so far? And again, this harkens back to what reclaiming authenticity is all about, finding that courage that you came into the world with, to be able to reclaim that which has always been in you from the beginning. So let's realize that there is so much more to us than what we have become so far, so much more to us than what we have experienced so far. It's that powerful. And these experiences that we go through, they do have the potential to make us better when we realize there is so much more to us. Which all of this brings us to our point today. How do we navigate through such difficult times? I mean, how do we do it? Or perhaps more accurately, we should ask, how should we be in such times? A lot of times we just want to focus on what I have to do. What can I do? There's so much that needs to be done. And there is a place and a time to ask those kinds of questions. But for tonight, let's focus on how should we be in such times? Let's focus on our beingness. Let's focus on our presence and who we truly are. So let's begin by taking a page out of one of the most beloved children's books, The Fall of Freddy the Leaf by Leo Buscaglia. Now, if you have never read this book, oh, you got to put it on your list for Santa Claus. I highly suggest that you get it. Okay. It's a great way to explain not only the subject of death and dying to children, but it also teaches the rest of us the significance of trusting, letting go, and simply be, especially in the midst of uncertainty and the unknown. Because, yes, on one level, this book is about the change of seasons. It's a short book. It's only like maybe 20, 25 pages long, if that. So it is a book about the change of seasons through the eyes of Freddy the Leaf, as he watches the other leaves on his tree grow, enjoy the sunshine, be tossed about by the wind and the rain, change colors with the season of autumn, turn brown, they turn brittle, and then finally they let go of their branches and they fall to the earth with grace. And then they become nourishment for the soil, nourishment for the tree. But also, on the other hand, this book also reminds us of the importance of yielding through change. You see, many of us often struggle with the uncertainty of change, and more importantly, the transitions that we go through. And this is often what we struggle with the most. I mean, if truth be told, that's what we struggle with. We don't like transitions. We don't like that liminal space that we find ourselves in, that we are here and we know we need to go somewhere somewhere. We're not there yet. And it's this giant mystery at times. And it does take a leap of faith. Well, we know that in our head, but do we know that in our heart? There is an importance of yielding through change. Okay? And there's the importance of transitions that we go through. And the reason we struggle with this is because we often allow fear to come in and take over. You know, as one of my dear friends keeps reminding me, every time the word fear comes up in our conversations, she says, now, you know what fear stands for? False evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. Fear. And that's what it is. You boil it all down, that's what it is. False evidence. But it appears to be real to us. And we allow this fear to come in and take over our mind. We often end up reacting to circumstances instead of responding with our truth of who we are. Reacting, responding. Yes, there is a difference between the two. Because whenever we react to something, think about it in your own life, whenever you react to something, we often do so out of fear or worry or anxiety. And all of this is rooted in our sympathetic nervous system, in our brains. You know, that fight or flight or freeze action. You know, and we see a lot of this happening throughout the world today with all the violence and uncertainty and people's reactions with some pretty strong emotions. That's the sympathetic nervous system. It's there for a reason. It's our fight or flight or freeze, okay? But it kicks in a survival mode. So what are we trying to survive when we react to something out of fear, worry, or anxiety? Well, we're reacting out of our woundedness. We react out of our wounds often. And a lot of people continue to act out of their woundedness because there's the old saying out there that wounded people wound people. Hurt people hurt people. And yet, on the other hand, when we respond to circumstances, okay, responding, not reacting, we often do so by replying and acting in a way that allows us to transition smoothly. And this is the part of the brain, you know, the parasympathetic nervous system. That's the part that keeps us calm and stable and reflective. Yes, you know, we act and we do, but more importantly, we become present. We remain. We persist. We don't lash out. So we have two types of nervous system, sympathetic, fight or flight, parasympathetic, nice and calm, stable, and reflective. Now, when we become present, when we are able to remain, when we are able to respond appropriately, it doesn't mean that just in our beingness, that we don't do anything. Instead, we often discover that it is a time when we let go in order to take on something better. And not just to take on something better, but rather to be better than what we were before. You know, we want to be more resilient. We want to be better prepared. Perhaps most importantly, we also want to be able to recognize in ourselves where there is still room for us to grow in our awareness or our acceptance and allowance, no matter where we are in our day. So as we walk our spiritual path, and yes, everybody has a spiritual path, we encounter things in our lives that compel us to let go of pain and loss. To let go of those shattered assumptions, to rebuild those shattered assumptions, and to let go of the emotional wounding that may have come from either ourselves or from others. But you know, we don't simply let go just for the sake of letting go. You know, we do so so that we can take on healing, perseverance, healing, grace, peace, inner freedom, joy, gratitude, and unconditional love towards ourselves and others. So, in other words, it brings us right back into relationships. There's a great quote out there from the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung, who used to say, "I'm not what happened to me. I am what I choose to become." I'm not what happened to me. I am what I choose to become. Because every journey I've been on has always taught me about how genuineness and authenticity in relationships are tangible, but they do indeed require a lifelong commitment to self-discovery and brutal honesty about who we are with all of our scars and our gifts, our phobias and our strengths, our graces and everything else. But unfortunately, this commitment to walking a spiritual path is considered by some a price way too high to pay and not worth their time. I mean, many people might reason, wouldn't it just be easier to, satisfy the status quo, go with the flow and not the question, don't rock the boat, just go along and get along. Well, on one hand, that might be the frequently traveled road, but let's not deceive ourselves here. This inner desire for genuineness and authenticity in our relationships with ourselves and others and God is not going away. In fact, that internal longing to be more authentic and truer to ourselves will only get stronger. The question is, how much more sleep do we want to keep losing night after night after night? How many more times are we going to blame others for what we don't have? Well, let's just for the moment consider the ancient wisdom of mountains. Especially with this time of the year, depending on where you live, the colors of autumn are gonna start lighting up those mountains with very vibrant colors for us to enjoy. And where I grew up, right outside of Harrisburg, we had, oh gosh, we had Blue Mountain. We had a bunch of mountain chains all around us. And this time of the year, it's just sparkling gold and sparkling reds and sparkling dark blues and purples. And I mean, it was just phenomenal. Oranges and so forth. It was just breathtaking. It's like you didn't have any words to be able to describe just the joy and the colors that you were seeing and experiencing. Well, I'm an avid fan of hiking mountains. I just wish my knees and my back would enjoy it as much as my mind does. But anyway, I have found that there's a striking parallel between our search for authenticity and how the ancient wisdom of mountains, literally and figuratively, gives us a glimpse into our desire for a psycho-spiritual transformation. So, in other words, mountains have much to teach us if we're paying attention. Because every year, every season, from rainfall to snowfall, generation to generation, mountains remain these stable giants that just, are all throughout our landscape. And since the beginning of time, people have had a fascination with mountains. They often spend their lives and maybe small fortunes climbing the highest mountains in the world. And perhaps this appeal to climb mountains come from attraction to the mountain's immensity and majesty. Or maybe they just want to satisfy the sense of a higher calling in their life to say, I did it. Well, at any rate, people today are also being inwardly led to withdraw from society and live in these mountains. And they want to develop their spiritual abilities and connect with this yearning that has led spiritual leaders to seek God on the mountaintop. And here's a good example of this. Ancient China records five sacred directional mountains that stretch across its country, in which sages dwelled and emperors made lifelong pilgrimages to seek the blessings of heaven. Now, these mountains, or as they're referred to as the five peaks, or Wuye, are central to the religion of Taoism. That is, how do we live in harmony with the way or path? And they're considered powerful spiritual locations that paralleled the cardinal directions and were believed to be the pillars that separated heaven from earth. Now, according to the ancient Chinese cosmology, the realm of heaven covered the realm of earth. And from this belief came this idea that heaven could fall down on us if it's not supported. So thus, the different energies of these mountains influence the spiritual traditions that grew in each of them, as the mountains themselves were believed to house spiritual energies. So in other words, they held up heaven. And another example of a very famous mountain is Kirkpatrick, one of the most important Catholic pilgrimages destinations in Ireland. And I had the privilege to climb Kirkpatrick many, many years ago. And it was breathtaking, to say the least. It's a mountain that I'm convinced is just made out of nothing but shale. And there was light rain. It was a Sunday morning, and it was a light rain. And when shale gets wet, it gets a little slippery. So it's kind of an interesting climb, but beautiful nonetheless. Now, in following in the footsteps of St. Patrick, who spent, as legend says, 40 days fasting on this mountain in the year around 440, 441 AD, nearly 1 million pilgrims climbed to the top every year. I mean, it's a well-trekked mountain. And following his fast, it is believed that St. Patrick rang a bell so loudly that the sound drove all the evil spirits and snakes out of Ireland. And for most people, then, the pilgrimage to the top of this sacred mountain is an act of penance, often remembering St. Patrick's devotion. You know, and some reach the summit on their knees, and some have been walking barefoot all the way to the top. Now, another example is coming from the Tiwa Native American mystic, ceremonial dancer, artist, and writer Joseph Rael, beautiful painted arrow. He emphasizes how mountains metaphorically refer to the human heart. He says the traditional form of a vision quest was to reach the top of a mountain. And going to the top of a mountain or any high place has the quality, symbolically, of going to the heart or a center of vibration, where we search not just for ordinary awareness, but for the highest possibility in conscious awareness. See, the mountaintop is in the environment for the highest potential because the vibration of light there is often very high quality. It is on top of a vision quest mountain where heart and mind are bonded together. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart and mind about this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, every now and then I run into this misperception out there that before you can really help somebody else, you have to be free from your own pain and suffering. In other words, to first be healed from your own problems, or at least, have your act together. And quite often, many people misquote Jesus's teachings in the Gospels about first taking the plank out of your own eye before removing the speck of sawdust from another. Okay. And when taken out of context, many people wrongly interpret this teaching to mean that others simply do not have the right to say anything, or at least people should mind their own business. Well, I don't think this is simply the case. In fact, it often turns out to be just the opposite, that in spite of themselves, people always find ways to reach out and to serve others in various and unique ways. Now, in the first half of this broadcast, we were talking about the book, The Fall of Freddy the Leaf. Like I said, if you don't have it, get it. You will love it. Now, typically, we think of this particular book as a children's book, but in reality, it has a deeper lesson for adults. Namely, it teaches us the importance of how do we yield through change. See, many of us often struggle with the uncertainty of change. More importantly, the transitions that we go through, we fight it. We don't like it. We don't trust it. But that's a fact of life. The only thing that we can count on is change itself. We all go through change. And this is what we struggle with the most, because again, even though we know it in our heads, and more importantly, we know that we go through transitions, we allow this fear to come in and take over. And then we often end up reacting to these circumstances instead of responding. And this is something that I pointed out in the first half of the broadcast, the difference between reacting and responding. Because whenever we react to something, quite often the case, it's kicked up by fear, worry, anxiety, like a knee-jerk reaction. And we see a lot of people reacting out of fear, worry, and anxiety throughout the world today. And with all the violence or uncertainty, and just people's reactions are just at an all-time high. Very, very strong emotions. And yet, on the other hand, we respond. And when we respond to circumstances, we do so by first taking a step back, let's just say, and we act in a way that allows us to transition smoothly. But yes, we act, and yes, we do. But more importantly, we realize that there is tremendous strength in our presence. And because of that strength, we're able to remain, we're able to persist. And again, as I mentioned in the first half, there is a striking parallel between our search for authenticity and how the ancient wisdom of mountains gives us a glimpse into our deep desire for the psycho-spiritual transformation. Because it appears that people from various cultures and religions and languages recognize a psycho-spiritual connection to at least one of the hundreds of mountains throughout the world. If you live near a mountain, you're going to find somebody climbing it, okay? Or, some people are just content to sit at the base and just admire the majesty of it. And depending if you have a favorite mountain, if you've ever climbed a mountaintop and looked out over a valley or at the site, you know how what you see has changed you. Because the view can be breathtaking. Looking in the six directions of above, below, north, south, east, west, we can really grasp the proportion of just how small we are in comparison to the vast world. And perhaps it's this realization that we are drawn to mountains in the first place, because we're stirred to reconnect with our hearts. It's kind of interesting that throughout history, many battles have been fought on or close to mountains, Perhaps, metaphorically speaking, this is a means of reflecting the heart's inner struggle. And maybe we climb mountains to get away from a disconnected world and conditional relationships in order to reconnect with ourselves and reconnect with God. And yet, when we gaze at, we look at, when we climb mountains, we may not realize the physical, psychological, and spiritual interdependence we have with mountains for our survival and well-being. I mean, think about it this way. You know, people and wildlife depend upon mountains for their agricultural and forest benefits, as well as for their source of water and nutrients. And we've come to depend on the minerals, you know, such as coal, iron ore, shale, methane, copper, gold, clay, silver, nickel, chromium, so on and so forth, for our everyday use. You know, still there's a lot of talk out there these days about reducing our carbon footprints, from eliminating the greenhouse gases and industrial emissions and the effects of mining to global warming and conservation. Yet what I don't hear included in these conversations is how the damaging effects of our carbon footprints clearly mimic the damaging effects of our interpersonal footprints that have on one another. Because today it's often considered the norm, if not the expectation, that people will walk all over one another, that they will lie, they will cheat, they will steal, and then expect that these actions will have no psychological or spiritual consequences. Well, if we assume this, we're gravely mistaken. You know, as evidenced by our attitudes and our actions, we haven't learned from previous generations' discoveries, nor have we learned from their mistakes. I mean, we clearly do not possess the ancient wisdom that comes from recognizing those lessons of respect and dignity, value and gratitude passed on to us in the creative order of things. So let me put it in another way. It ought to be glaringly obvious that the way we treat our environmental resources and animals is a direct reflection of our attitudes and behaviors towards one another. In fact, despite all of our searching for psycho-spiritual wholeness, we do not possess such wisdom because we just simply do not understand how we are spiritually and emotionally fragmented. And yet, it's from this understanding that we recognize the opportunity that is before us to be able to heal this relationship with ourselves and others and the land. The importance of yielding through change. The lesson of the fall of Freddie the Leaf. See, many of us often struggle with uncertainty, the uncertainty of change, and more importantly, the transitions that we go through. You know, we just entertain that fear. But you know, rarely is a journey just a journey, especially a spiritual journey. You know, the miles that we travel are often filled with anticipations or assumptions and attitudes about what lies ahead. And to be quite honest, we're excited. You know, that excitement can often swell our hearts, and at times it can swell our heads as we ask ourselves, I wonder what I'll find. What would it be like? How long will it take? Am I there yet? And, you know, instead of sitting back and enjoying the ride, we become fixated on answering these questions. In fact, we may often lose sight of the transformative purpose of a particular journey itself, because we just might still be in the habit of asking these questions of who, what, when, where, and why, because of our past experiences. But indeed, where we have come from and where we have been often influences us on where we think we want to go on this journey and what we will find. Let's consider this thought. If we believe this way when we take a physical trip, are we just as curious or anxious or impatient about our own spiritual journey? After all, we may not even take into consideration the stamina or the fortitude needed to undertake such a trip. It's not a journey of haste. It's a journey of self-discovery. It's a journey of integration. It's a journey of endurance. It's a journey of transformation. But the interesting part here is that we don't take such a psycho-spiritual journey alone. You know, because psycho-spiritual journeys have often been misunderstood as having a linear or a logical sequence. You know, it contains a specific beginning and ending point. But you know, instead, a psycho-spiritual journey is far less defined. We may point to a specific time when we realized we were seeking a psycho-spiritual path, but quite often, this kind of journey takes us into ourselves, and it takes us beyond ourselves. And at times, this journey circles back and presents us with life lessons that we have yet to learn. You know, they're open-ended, they're unknown. They might even be mysterious. And psycho-spiritual journeys require a faith that takes us beyond our personal assumptions. It takes us beyond those boundaries. They take us out of our comfort zones and our limitations. They take us to self-discovery and wonder, not so much of how far we have come, but maybe more in terms of how far we have yet to go. In fact, we should never believe that we have arrived or we've reached the end of our journey while on this earth and it's all good. I have nothing else to learn. Don't do that. Don't do that. Because to our surprise, these journeys are more about grappling with our authenticity through the recognition of how God uses irony in our lives. And irony is a great teacher. In fact, however uncertain we are about what lies ahead, we can take comfort by the fact that we're never alone. We are in full view of millions and millions and millions of people who have gone on before us, because we are connected to our ancestors by our humanity and the relentless desire to pursue the one who knows us and calls us by name. And it's these stories that connect with theirs as one continuous narrative of ironic encounters with ourselves, others, and God. And perhaps it is this element of irony where we first begin to see God in our lives. You know, several years ago, this really got my attention, where I found myself becoming interested in being a bridge person. You know, one who walks between two cultures by looking for connections that could bring unity, understanding, and healing for both. Okay. And even before I ever heard of this term, I always found a resonating compatibility between Native American spirituality and my Christian faith. In fact, it's through understanding another's religion and spirituality that I have come to better understand my own. And for example, my own faith has been enhanced by Native American traditions that celebrate God as the creator and sustainer of this world. And through Native songs and dances and other traditions, I've also discovered a stronger connection to all living things, as well as my responsibilities of stewardship, to care for all that I have been gifted to humanity. And I'm not alone in this discovery. You know, certainly these and other similar beliefs have been celebrated among Christians and Native Americans. Unfortunately, I'm also aware of history, which has also revealed times of Christianity's extreme prejudice, intolerance, and strong-arm conversions towards Native people, which still contributes to intergenerational PTSD and internalized oppression among Native Americans to this day. Well, in his book, Mountains Beyond Mountains, Harvard professor and medical doctor Paul Farmer uses his skill of contemporary medicine to serve Haiti's most vulnerable people. And ironically, it is in the mountains of Haiti where he encounters the ongoing spread of communicable diseases, namely HIV and tuberculosis, with little to no medicine. Now, through his medical and political efforts, Dr. Farmer brought hope to those who live in despair by supplying medicine to improve their lives. In fact, he tells one story where it just took him, 3 days to just, go by, I think Jeep, and then he had to walk several miles. And he eventually found this person and said, "Here, take your tuberculosis medicine." And then he returned back to his village where his clinic was. And that was the kind of dedication that Dr. Farmer had. Okay. And interestingly, his story of the work that he did there, it was set against the background of a Haitian proverb: beyond mountains, there are mountains. So, loosely translated, it means it seems as though once you solve one problem, another problem arises, and then another, and another, and so on and so on. Being on a psycho-spiritual journey toward reclaiming our authenticity doesn't necessarily guarantee us avoiding the obstacles of, let's say, emerging mountains or one problem after another. In fact, if anything, a psycho-spiritual journey makes us even more aware of the metaphorical mountains in our lives. And this awareness, I believe, is a gift from God that produces a kind of lived wisdom that enables us to climb these mountains with perseverance and endurance and even patience. But just a word of caution here: just because we have successfully scaled one mountain in our lives doesn't mean that we have scaled them all. Each mountain has its own distinct ancient wisdom and challenges we need to hear and integrate into our lives, especially once we have reached its summit. Now, despite our perceived differences in race and language and religion and culture, there is a common Native American expression that emphasizes this interconnectedness among all that we see, namely, all are related. Matakie Oesun. This phrase is understood by Lakota Sioux people as an expression extending to all of creation. Everything. That is, humanity, animals, vegetation, minerals, elements, land, water, thunder, fire, wind, sun, moon, stars, etc., are all connected to one another, and each one affects one another. See, for too long, and I don't need to point this out, but for too long, humanity has been influenced by the "what's in it for me" scenario. As much as we can become enthralled by our gifts and our giftedness, we have to remember that our talents, our skills, our blessings, our knowledge, and wisdom are not for ourselves. These gifts are for the benefit of somebody else. Because reclaiming our authenticity compels us to now ask, how can I serve humanity with what's been entrusted to me? How can I alleviate suffering? How can I speak up for those who don't have a voice? This is what authenticity is really about. Some might say that they're content being just who they are. Well, I think we need to ask ourselves, am I being authentic today? Am I being honest and genuine in my relationships? Why are we waiting till we're retired, whenever that will be, to do what we have always dreamed of doing? I mean, what are we waiting for? Having all our bills paid? Having enough money in the bank? Too many people play the "I'll get around to it someday" game, while vulnerable and wounded people are in need now. Such hurting people need others to see in them the potential to live authentically, including the benefit of reclaiming authenticity. Perhaps people believe that they have too much to lose to be authentic. Perhaps they don't know or fear that people will not accept them as they are. Perhaps they have a fear of rejection and ridicule or shame or being ostracized or shunned. Well, the Native Americans have a saying passed down from ancient times that the strength of a tree comes not from growing thicker in the good years where there is plenty of water, but the strength of a tree comes from staying alive in the bad, dry times. Well, indeed, we live in a time when, as we focus on the virtue of stewardship, the one gift that we need to foster and treasure is the gift of ourself, our inner life, our spirit of resiliency. There is great value in reclaiming our authenticity because we find an inner freedom and an inner strength, a peace, an assurance of who we are without giving away our uniqueness, playing by somebody else's rules and definitions and expectations. For some, finding their inner strength to stand on their own 2 feet further empowers them to reach out for better relationships or better jobs or a stronger sense of justice. Indeed, those who are authentic often find God's blessings. And I believe this is where the next great spiritual awakening will come from, finding the strength to reclaim our authenticity. The more we recognize the presence of God in our lives, the more we'll experience an empathic resonance, which is our soul coming into resonance with the soul of God. What we discover in being more fully connected to the soul of God is that we are connected to things that bring us great joy, as well as to things that are disturbing and cause us great suffering. But still, we embrace all to be an extension of God's presence and grace and healing, a healing for people who are looking and listening for God's presence. I'm Dr. James Houck, and I just want to thank you for spending this time, you know, just listening to this podcast of Reclaiming Authenticity. And let us please remember that everything is laid out for us. Our path is straight ahead of us. Sometimes it may appear as invisible, but it's there. You may not know where it's going, but you still have a path to follow. It's a path to the soul of the Creator. And really, that's the only path there is. So until then, everybody take care and everybody be safe. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.